Welcome, welcome, one and all, welcome into the Scani Johnny podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett, joined as per usual by Aaron Flottam.
Hi, John!
And as not-so-per-usual, but friend of the podcast, Jim Widener.
Hello, fellas. Thanks for letting me follow up Andy Herman. I appreciate that. That's not going to be an easy one to follow up. I appreciate that, though.
But we love you, Jim. Thanks. Well, thank you. Thanks for coming back.
Well, thank you for having me.
And thanks for not blocking me on Twitter.
You're borderline mute right now, but that's okay.
That's what we all wished. But just so everyone knows, you can follow this show here on Twitter at ScaniJohnny1. You can follow me at JBarn54. Aaron, go ahead.
I'm at Cheddar Talk, John.
That's amazing. And Jim, where do people find you on Twitter?
At JimWidener51.
Right. And Jim Widener does contribute heavily to the Last Word on Sports as a Packer writer there. So that's where when we used to do this podcast under a different name over at Last Word on Sports. We definitely had Jim on there, and we definitely continue to read his stuff there. Definitely make sure you go and check out everything he's writing over that way, too. If you have anything else you want to send to us, you can send it via ScaniJohnny@gmail.com. And make sure that whenever you listen to us, whether it's on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, make sure you give us a rating. Make sure you make it a 5-star rating, of course, and give us a review. Let us know how we're doing. And those ratings help to make sure other people can find the podcast. But we have a lot this week. We had a lot this week, and we were very wrong last week, apparently. So we want to get right into it with the main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
Okay, we're starting off with Packers, of course, because the Packers did everything that, of course, that we predicted last week, which, none of it.
We were really wrong.
We got Adrian Amos. We wanted Adrian Amos. I think we were very clear last week that was a player we wanted. They got him for a 4-year deal, $37 million, $21 million of it over the first 2 years. So it's friendly for the first 2 years, and they don't have much of a penalty after that.
Right, and I think I wanted Earl Thomas, but was okay with Amos. So
Amos is a younger version. He's still good, and he does a lot of the things that you want out of him. He's a big hitter. He's going to be an interesting guy in the Pettine scheme.
And then the Bears went and got HaHa Clinton Dix.
I was gonna say he's the total opposite of HaHa Clinton Dix. He can tackle.
Yes.
And I did see some people talk about it, and I forget who it was, and I would give credit if I knew, but they're saying basically the Packers went out and got Adrian Amos, and the Bears said that, you know, they got a lesser player in Clinton Dix, but they're going to surround him with better players, and they're going to pay less for him. It's a fair enough trade in that sort of sense to say that, you know, they just had different ideas in mind of what they wanted.
Yeah, the Packers wanted a safety that could tackle and cover, and the Bears wanted someone that can't cover and doesn't tackle, and got just housed by what's his name from Detroit on the way to the end zone.
Golden Tate.
Yeah, Golden Tate. Thank you. Yes.
Just everyone. He had no interest in tackling anybody. But yeah,
he absolutely quit that game. His season came to an end the week before. He was not going to get dirty or have any of those rubber pellets at Ford Field get on his jersey at all that day.
They're disgusting. Why would you?
They are. But they're hard to get off.
Yeah, they really are. Mud is much easier.
Yeah, but I mean, the big thing is, too, the Packers paid for it. And the Bears aren't going to be able to pay for that sort of play coming up. I mean, they're going to be paying Trubisky after next year if they think he's a player, so this will be his third year, so they have to start planning on how they're going to actually afford to have a quarterback after next season. On top of this, though, the Packers grabbed two Smiths who are edge rushers. They got Za'Darius Smith, the dawning of the age of Za'Darius, of course.
Thank God.
Yeah. 4 years, $66 million. He comes over from the Baltimore Ravens. He's also a big guy. He's 6'4", 272, a guy who can really hold the edge and get after the pass rusher. And then going from Washington, they picked up Preston Smith, 4 years, $52 million. What people keep saying is his sack numbers aren't what you'd like. Get somewhere around 6 a year or so over the last 4 years. But he's an influencer. Our friend of the podcast, Andy Herman, had a whole bunch of things on. Even when he's not getting to the quarterback, he's finding ways to influence the passer. And with our corners that we have, just giving them the chance to be done with the play in 3 seconds is a big deal, and it will change the way this defense works, I think.
Yeah, and we got him for a lot less than the Vikings paid for a guy who doesn't get to the quarterback.
Are you talking about Tony Barr or Anthony Barr?
Tony Barr, yeah, sure. Whatever you want to call him. 13 and a half sacks. And another stat that Eddie Herman picked out about him was that 13 and a half sacks over 5 years, none against an offensive lineman.
Well, my thing with him, and this, we're not going to talk much about Vikings here, but my big thing is they continue to play him at a position that's not his best position.
Well, I hope they continue going forward to do the same thing. So,
well, and yeah, now they've paid, what, $13 million a season to have him be a stand-up linebacker that played. He didn't play in college, so good luck to him.
He would have been playing a different position.
Zadarius Smith, awesome. Love it.
Yeah, Anthony Barr, if he'd gone to the Packers, would have been playing an outside linebacker different than the 4-3 system he plays now. He has those sack numbers, but, I mean, he's essentially Brady Papinga. You know, like he doesn't need to rush the quarterback. That's not the system they play. They get their rushing off the edge from defensive ends. It's a different system. So I get the numbers, and I get what Andy was trying to say. I don't think those numbers convert because of the change he would have in coming to a Packers defense and playing a Zadarius Smith type role as opposed to what he does for the Vikings now.
Well, and I think that's kind of why the Zadarius Smith and the Preston Smith signings, I mean, if you look at the scheme's a lot different. Petten's, what he asks his outside linebackers to do is different than what Dom Capers did. Because Capers, I mean, all their pass rush came from the outside mostly. Now with Petten depends on his, his down linemen, his defensive ends, Daniels, Clark, and whoever's playing, you know, if it's
probably Lowry,
you know, Lowry, because we'll get into the salary cap issue here in a little bit. But, you know, I think when Petten was with the Jets, I think their top outside linebacker and rushing the passer was Kelvin Pace, if I'm not mistaken. And he didn't put up huge numbers either. So I think that they've got two linebackers now that can do different things. Zadarius Smith can line up inside as a defensive end, which I saw in a lot of the clips. And I think that's what Petten's looking for. And I like the signings. Yeah. And, you know, you're getting two guys that are, I think both are 27 are going to be 27 who can play multiple positions on the front. And, you know, if they can draft another outside linebacker or get one for the cheap, you know, great, you know, that can rotate in. And I think it's, They weren't the flashiest names for edge pass rushers, but I think that they got them on the right side. They're kind of, I think Gutekunst talked about their ascending, and I think that's definitely, if you look at the numbers they're putting out, that they are.
No, and if you put it together as the law firm of Smith, I had it in my head and then I lost it. I had it there. Like, Smith, Daniels, and Clark. The law firm of Smith, Daniels, and Clark, that's a good front four right there. And like you said, with Zadarius Smith and even Preston Smith, both of them are good sized. They don't have to, I mean, they're edge pass rushers, but you can stunt and you can do things like that with them, which Mike Petten was very hamstringed last year with his talent ability. I mean, just a good front four like that. I know it's a 3-4, but it's the front four. But I mean, and with Dean Lowry too, it's good. What gives them options about, are they all stars? No, they're not, but they're good, solid players. As a matter of fact, Zadarius Smith wasn't even really a starter per se in Baltimore. He was more of a 2/3 guy, Baja Biamila, if you will. But, I mean, the guy's got this, but unlike Baja Biamila, he doesn't just have to go outside pass rush. He's a big enough dude. He can go right up the middle too. I think it's really good, and it's and you know what, and they always say that about 50% of your free agent signings aren't going to work out, but a lot of the times that's also based on, you know, going out and signing a big name guy and expecting a lot from him, and then he gets paid and then he gets lazy. These guys they're not just another guy, they're not Jags, but they're not much more than that. So you figure that they're still going to keep working, and they're young enough, they're still working for another contract too. So
And what I like about this, and I wrote an article on Last Word on Sports, is what it does is allow Gutekunst a lot of flexibility in this draft in the first round now.
Right.
Now, say it like in I was listening to the guys, Andy Herman's Packaday podcast guys, And they were talking about now the chance of Ed Oliver from the University of Houston, the defensive lineman, he might be sliding because of several different reasons, that if he falls to number 12 and he's an interior pass rusher and he's the best on the board and Gutekunst grabs him, now he's got another toy Petten does to play with. And I think it's great. I think it's, you know, yeah, it's not the I have to laugh. I won't name the website I was on that some grumpy guy that proceeds to hate the Packers, and he's in a Packers fans group, which just drives me crazy.
JS Online.
It's kind of close to that, but it's not. It's actually a website for professionals. I'll leave it at that.
So a website I will never be on. Thank you, John.
Well, it's interesting. he was talking about how, and he's a confirmed Ravens fan, which I find interesting that he hasn't been booted out of this group, but he said that I would have took Terrell Suggs for 1 year over Za'Darius Smith.
Yeah. Oh, really? Was that the option, I guess?
apparently it was the option, and really? That's what you were going to take?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'd do that too. Are they going to give us Suggs? I mean, if that trade's on the table, we'll look at that.
With what you're saying, Jim, too, about the draft, with taking Oliver at that interior defensive lineman position, everyone will go, well, the defense has been addressed now. No, the defense has been terrible. Like, if they spend that first round draft pick on a stud defensive lineman, or if I don't know what the, I don't pay attention to the draft as much as I used to. So, or the prospects coming up, but I mean, if there's a really good linebacker there or a safety out there, or let's not spend another draft pick on a cornerback. So that's out of bounds. But beyond that, I mean, why not? I mean, why not have a embarrassment of riches at a defensive position for once in 20 years?
Well, I mean, I think that's the big thing, is now you've given yourself a chance to, I mean, they all talk about draft the best available player, and they actually do at this point, because they still have needs, but now, you know, you have, with two first rounders, you know, maybe one of the tight ends slips to 30 at 12, they can grab like an Ed Oliver or whoever, maybe one of those players that slides out of the top 10.
Or they
can trade it and do something with it, and they still have the 30th pick. So it's an interesting thing.
Right, and the Colts got roasted last year for taking a guard way up early in the first round. You don't waste a first round draft pick on a guard. Well, that dude's awesome, and because of that, the Colts have an awesome offensive line, which allowed zombie Andrew Luck to come back from the dead and lead his troops down the field, a la Civil War style.
Yeah,
I mean, all the way to the divisional round. I mean. So if it happens, it happens, and it's right. Then maybe, and that's the only other position I wouldn't mind seeing them use that high draft pick on, is an offensive lineman, because it's an okay unit, especially with the signing of, help me, what's his name?
Billy Turner,
which of course, if he's your fifth lineman, he's your fifth lineman. But I mean, you can never have enough depth at the great teams always have good offensive linemen and good defensive linemen. See Patriots.
Yeah, and here's the thing, too, is you just mentioned Billy Turner. He was the last player of the big ones that was signed from other teams, because we kept Mercedes Lewis and some other guys. But 4 years, $28 million. He started 11 games for Denver last year. He played both guard and tackle, right guard and right tackle last year for the Denver Broncos. He's also played for Miami Dolphins before that. But it was a guy they wanted to keep, but they definitely weren't going to pay what we were going to pay. This is one guy where I love having Turner. That price tag is something significant, though. But man, Byron Bell's on the right. Our right guard spot was just killing us last year, and just a drive killer. So it's nice to have a real professional guard.
Well, and I wrote an article for Pack of the Future here. It actually published it today, about don't sleep on the signing of Billy Turner, and I think that. It's a guy who, he was drafted in the third round, so he had some athletic ability coming out of North Dakota State. He was their left tackle for, I think, the last two seasons. He played for the Bison, and he was a left tackle. He got drafted by the Dolphins. They played him at right tackle, left tackle. He failed that, struggled. They cut him. I think he was with the Ravens for like 2 days, and then eventually made it to Denver, played three games and 16 for him, played one because of a broken hand in 17. Last year, he played in all 16, but started 11 at both right guard and tackle. And the Broncos wanted to bring him back. So, I mean, he, another player that's ascending, or at least looks like it is. I mean, it's all a guessing game, but I mean, you know, and they're going to run that zone scheme this year. And he seems like a pretty athletic guy who can do that. And also, he actually can, and it eventually will happen, Bulaga will go down, and you can put him at right tackle. So, I mean, it's kind of a two for one.
Yeah. Yeah. And they did, and they didn't have that last year either. And that's one thing about him, is that he can play all, he's played every position except center on the line. So, I mean, that's good too, in the fact that he can cover down on that. I said, in a perfect world, he just becomes the right guard. He's your number five player. You're gonna pay $7 million for a quality offensive lineman anyways. And going back across the border to your side over there, the Vikings let what's-his-name go, their other guard. So now they have one signed guard on their entire roster right now. So they're completely reliant on the scrap heap of the free agency that's left and the draft. I'd rather have it this way. I really would.
Yeah, you feel much better with the line. But we have to keep moving along.
There's five people that have started games.
Right. We have to keep moving along, though, at this point. The one big thing that came out, Tom Silverstein was reporting it just this afternoon here now on Twitter, came out. Apparently the Packers did not do their math right, and there might be cap issues ahead, that they might only have about $5 million left for next season. I don't know how this happens. I mean, like, if this is true, we're going to hear about some firings very quickly, and some big ones too, I would think. That's just like your only job. When you're the guy who does the cap stuff, or the room of people who does the cap stuff, I mean, what else? What
do you mean, Jim's favorite person on the entire planet?
Well, it's beyond words what I feel of Russ Ball.
You had some words before the show started. Yeah. We heard them.
We'll hear the family-friendly ones.
You've got one job, and it's to make sure you don't get put into this situation. That's if this is true, for some reason he's been untouchable. Somebody's got to go, and it's got to be Russ Ball if this is true.
And I think that at some point it calls him. You know, Mark Murphy made him a co-equal member of this group. You know, like, you know, it's like the three branches of the U.S. government. We have, you know, the GM, the head coach, and the salary cap guy are co-equal branches that all report just to Murphy. And if this is true, if the guy who's in charge of that one thing is somehow equal to your GM and messed up adding, then that calls into question why did you have that much faith in that, if that's what happened here? And so, yeah, this is going to unfold very quickly.
We hear, Jonathan, every year we hear how great Russ Ball is at doing this. And if this is the case, you know, obviously he's been real great with, you know, re-signing his own people, because they haven't signed any free agents. I get it, that Jimmy Graham last year, but under Thompson it was a rarity. Oh man, if this is true, somebody's got to call him out on this.
No, and you're right too. It's not like he's had a really hard job up to this point. This is the first offseason where he's had to deal with free agency math. I mean, my uncle embezzled money from Roundy's for years to the tune of $2.4 million, and it took him 8 years to catch up before they put him in jail. I mean, this is one year, and you can't even do it right. Graham math last year was so hard.
Hold on. I mean, like, the one thing is, it's not just like, oh, he's done the math and these things. He helped put together all the contracts for all these other players leading into this. And he's done it for a while. He's been pretty well respected, not just in Green Bay, but other people have been trying to get him over into their general managing staffs. The thing that's just bothering me is not that, like, he's terrible at all these things, but you don't get to bat 900 at that job. You know, it's like, you don't get to have 9 years out of 10 work great.
Your brother Mike would be very mad at him right now, because it's just numbers.
It's just numbers, and Mike's great with numbers. So, yeah.
He's an actuary.
Yeah, he is. He actuary is.
it's mind blowing that this guy keeps getting it. Just if this turns out to be true, I'll just shake my head and think, what the heck? I mean, if you're Gutekunst, what do you think? You go in there and just say, this is your job. This is the one thing you're supposed to do.
Well, I'm sure Gutekunst isn't allowed to say anything to him.
No, they're co-equals.
The hierarchy works in Green Bay anymore.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he has to hand the note to Murphy to give to Ball to tell him that he sucks. I don't know.
Hey, Mark, can you tell Russ that he sucks?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Are you good at your job? Check yes or no.
And you guys laugh about that thing about my uncle embezzling from Roundy's, but that was actually a real story. I'm sorry, I don't know why that came flying out of my mouth.
I don't know, but I love how funny you thought the actuary joke was.
Warren Buffett would have also thought it was funny. So.
Mike has met Warren Buffett, of course, too, which we talked about before. But yes, and when Mike met him, he got to have a picture taken with him, and he got to have one picture. And so he's got a picture of himself holding a sign with a guy that Aaron and I had played with that says, what it says on it is, Kevin Rowland is bad at math and finances or something. It's like, it's the guy we deployed with.
Kevin Rowland is a financial advisor.
He is a financial advisor and very good at his job, but the sign is Kevin Rowland like knows nothing about finance or something. It's hilarious. On top of all the finances here, some of the finances for Brashad Breeland just got much better, but they're very much better in Kansas City. So the Packers have lost him. He's a nice guy. You like having him around. He's going to be your third or fourth at this point. He wasn't a star, and he was hurt a bunch of last year, but it would have been nice to have kept him.
Yeah, well, it is what it is. And actually, he should be, if anything, he should have given the Packers a discount too, because they kind of pulled him off the scrap heap. But
Nobody has to give anybody a discount. This is their job.
No, I know. It's their job, but
yeah. It would have been
and
nice.
On top of it, too, after what we were just talking about not having a cap space, they couldn't afford him anyways.
I was going to say that if they could actually find somebody that's still on the market, but apparently they're going to have to work for food now if they come to Green Bay or punch the clock in Lambeau. I don't know.
We'll find out again. That story will unfold more over this week. Now that we've got the first part of it, we're going to hear what happened, and I imagine that'll come up quickly.
Oh, and speaking of stars, how do you guys feel about seeing Randall Cobb in a Cowboys jersey?
Oh, I saw Nelson visited Seattle, so I mean, that'd
oh, great,
be
even
a good
better.
And New England's interested, so that's.
New England would be worse because Seattle doesn't know what to do with wide receivers, generally speaking.
with slot receivers, if he had actually ended up in New England, he'd
be their
Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he goes to Seattle. He's going to be their number three at least because Lockett's. He's a legitimate wide receiver, and Baldwin is an above average receiver. He's a top 20 kind of guy, but not a top 10. Yeah, he's not going to beat either of them out at this point in their careers. But
Baldwin's not consistent, but he's very consistent at one thing, and that's making huge catches just at the right time to make you really mad as a fan of the other team.
Yeah, he's a nice receiver. He's like I said, he's top 20, but not top 10. But moving on from all that and all the everything we had there, because we were trying to keep it on schedule here a little bit. We're not going to talk about the scores for anything that happened with Badgers or Marquette, but coming into the tournament here, Badgers and Marquette both lost in the semifinals of their conference games. Badgers lost to Michigan State, who ended up winning the Big Ten. No, I'm sorry, losing the Big Ten to Michigan. Sorry. Right. And then Marquette lost to Seton Hall, you know, powerhouse of the 1980s, Seton Hall. And that got them both to being five seeds, the cursed five seed. Badgers are going to be playing Oregon in the South Regional. Where is the first South Regional game going to be? San Jose, California, of course. Marquette will be playing Murray State in the Western Regional. Where in the Western Regional? Hartford, Connecticut, everybody. these are universities of higher learning, you know, just...
Somewhere Rand McNally is rolling in his grave right now.
I just couldn't look at
that. That's usurped by the fact that the NCAA are running this, so that should tell you something.
Fair point. Yeah, that gets rid of all logic.
Yeah, so I'll be entirely honest. Marquette was a top 10 team like 2 weeks ago, and right now I don't see them winning they're playing Murray State. Murray State's a real team. Who'd they just beat? I'm trying to remember. Belmont. They just beat Belmont, who got in without even winning their conference. Murray State's a legit team, and Marquette looks like just lost. Once Seton Hall figured out how to beat them, then everybody beat them from that point on. They lost like four of their last five. It's a ridiculous setup. Marquette is just on the wrong end of a streak here. It's a 5-12 game. In my brackets, I'm picking Murray State. I have the Badgers beating Oregon, but I don't have them beating K-State.
I got to be honest, I'd be shocked if they got out of the first round. I watched Wisconsin against Nebraska the other day, and boy, that was
hot garbage.
Oof. No, yeah. That Gene Hackman wouldn't have been happy with that type of basketball. That was.
Well, you have to remember too, though. My whole thought of this too is, you know, Oregon has no business being in this tournament. Oregon only got in because they snuck into an automatic bid. If they'd have lost that game in the championship game of the Pac-12, they're not getting in. They were terrible. They're not a good team. But the Pac-12 is, if you want to talk about hot garbage, that's the Pac-12 right now. They got, what, three teams got in, I think. And Washington's the only one of any of them that's any good.
But still, it's like what we were saying during the pre-show. It's like, with this season, with the Badgers and all the high hopes that there were, well, there were high hopes last year, too, and they didn't even make the tournament.
Yeah, but everybody was hurt last year.
With everything that's going on, of course, only the Badgers could pull a power conference opponent as a 12 seed. You know, usually 12 seed is Ma and Pa's pretty good A&M University or West Kentucky Central Mid-State A&I State.com. So, I mean, oh, of course, only Wisconsin would pull that. And if they even beat them, then most likely they're going to run into K-State, which they would lose. And if somehow they beat K-State, then they have to play Virginia more than likely.
Yeah.
So it's not good. True fact about Murray State, though, going back to Marquette, they beat a university called Spalding earlier this year. They beat them 106-36.
Jeez. Did they want a cheeseburger, french fries?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody remember Caddyshack? There we go.
Yes.
You'll have nothing and you'll like it, Spalding.
They've got a guard at Murray State, Ja Morant. That kid, he averages 24.6 points, 10 rebounds, and 5.5 assists a game. He's a 6'3 guard, and he's going to be probably, you know, the guy going against Marcus Howard a lot. They're going to push Howard around. Howard's 5'11, and he's going to go up against a bigger guy. I mean, they don't have anybody on Murray State over 6'9, but, I mean, Marquette only has one guy over 6'9, too.
But Murray State only also beat one ranked opponent, and that was – or they only played one ranked opponent, and they lost to him, Auburn.
Okay, so. But, I mean, Marquette down the stretch was losing to Seton Hall and – just, well, whoever else showed up, the sorrowful sisters of the poor, just, yes. they didn't get anything going.
Moving on, except for the top teams in the Big Ten, all those other teams, Wisconsin and Minnesota,
Wisconsin was fourth.
Those teams are just so inconsistent. Look at what Minnesota did. They beat Purdue and
twice.
Then just got shellacked by Michigan the following game. I mean, it's just, yeah. They're all over the place.
They just got Purdue's number.
If Wisconsin can play good basketball right away and be the team that they showed at times, they'll be fine. But if they play like they did against Nebraska, I mean, I don't know much about Oregon basketball, but I have to see them.
I think Nebraska's better than Oregon. Nebraska is a plucky team that people were picking to go into the tournament, and they had a couple really tough losses and some injuries. But Oregon, I don't think I just don't think they're that good. But yeah, Wisconsin doesn't have a bench. They just don't play anybody off the bench. Moving into pro basketball, though, the Bucks, they're now three games up on Toronto. There are 12 games left. We're 70 games into this season. Here's the list of games that they have left. They have the Lakers.
Garbage.
Yeah, the Heat. They have. And now the Heat are okay. They don't have a winning record, but they're the eighth spot right now.
You catch that stat about the game the other day against the Heat?
No,
it's the only team in NBA history to be down by 20 at the half and still win by 15. It's the only time it's ever happened in NBA history.
All right. They also have two games against Cleveland, two against Atlanta, two against Brooklyn, and then
garbage.
Four other games. There are four games of their last 12 that are against winning teams: Houston, the Clippers, Philadelphia, and OKC. They also, of their last 12, they only have four road games. Philadelphia is the only road game against winning team. OKC, the Clippers, and Houston are all coming to Milwaukee. Their only road games now are Cleveland, Atlanta, Brooklyn, and Philadelphia. Brooklyn is 500. They're not a losing team, but they're not a winning team right as I speak now. But those are tough ones. It looks like basically how they line up. The Bucks, I think, with this setup, are just clear set for that number one seed. They have a 9.1 point differential, which is best in the NBA, 3.1 points better than Golden State. Mm-hmm. And they got a good schedule set up for the rest of the year. They're likely going to end up playing either Miami, Brooklyn, or Orlando in that first round of the playoffs. I like our odds against any of them. If I'm taking my pick, I think I want Brooklyn. I don't know what you think, Aaron.
It's a horse apiece. The only team I don't want to see in the first round is if the 76ers somehow blow it and end up being the eighth or seventh seed, depending upon where the Bucks end up. I don't think the Bucks are going to be the second seed. I am glad that they have a lot of home games here at the end. Mirotić has been subject since he's been here. He's had some glowing moments. The big problem is that, in case you missed it, Malcolm Brogdon's out for 6 to 8 weeks with plantar fasciitis tear in his left foot. So that's not good because, whether people want to believe it or not, he is the second best player the Bucks have. The numbers might not show it, but he really is. Bledsoe and Middleton are more visibly out there, and Brooks Lopez, Splash Mountain himself, is great with the blocks and the threes and everything else. But Malcolm Brogdon is, outside of Giannis, he's the only other one that stirs the drink. Like, there's nobody else that, you know, and there was a scary moment in yesterday's game against Philadelphia where Giannis came down wrong on his foot. He ended up playing out the rest of the game. But it was it's the Giannis show, and that's about it. Yesterday's game against the 76ers, it's a little bit easier to swallow in the fact that Giannis put down 50 points and was ridiculous, but it's hardened math. It's not good when you have a player score 50 points or more, because that means somebody...
Don't let Russ Ball figure that out for you.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim. But it's bad math. Whenever you hear about a player scoring 50 points or more, how many games in a row did James Harden just rack off just a ton of points? And it's like, yeah, but they're still losing at the same time, because that means the whole team isn't playing well. And yesterday was another day. It's happened a couple times here since the band's gotten back together that nobody can shoot. And this last stretch here against some of these lesser teams, and the Bucks being in a good place, they have to be 8-4 to make 60 wins, which will be the first time since Jack Sikma was on the team that they have won 60 games. So it's a good place for them to be in to try and get things together. They're making some moves right now, bringing up someone from the G League, I can't remember his name, who's another long-bodied guy. They cut somebody today too, and I think they need these home games and this somewhat soft stretch to kind of get their stuff together to move into the playoffs. The first round shouldn't be a problem, no matter who they're against. They're whoever from the East that they're going to go up against, it's not going to be a problem. It's when they start running into the Torontos and the Philadelphias in the second and third round that they're going to start having problems. Yeah. And God forbid Boston gets their poop in a pile, because they have a lot of talent, but they are just a self-destructive unit that I don't know what happened up in Boston. But if they were to get it together, Boston's the most talented all-around team in the East, but they can't get it together for whatever reason. And it's gone to the Bucks' favor.
Yeah.
You know, and Kawhi Leonard is a legit all-star in Toronto. And he's got a good supporting cast. Bringing Marcus Gasol up there didn't help the Bucks' chances either.
But moving on into just a little bit of Brewers, the only things we'll talk about, I mean, of course, the biggest thing that happened for the Brewers, who currently sit in sixth place in the Cactus League, which no one cares, the biggest thing that happened is that Baker Mayfield coached 3 innings at first base.
Yeah, he did.
And took BP. He and Yelich know each other, and he was with Yelich during the video when Yelich found out he was the MVP. So he came down and spent a couple days at Brewers camp and took BP and coached first base. That's hilarious. I love that.
I'm going to cut you off at the pass right here, John. Who would ever thought there'd be a day in sports history where two teams that have just not done anything for 25 years, basically, minus 2007 and 2011 for the Brewers, who would have thunk that national news would have been made by the Brewers and the Browns together?
I don't know. But the Brewers and Cleveland together created Major League, so I think we've got some chemistry.
Great point.
Right now, what I think it's ESPN was saying as they're listing here. The Brewers five would be Yoelis Chacin, then Chase Anderson, then Zach Davies, Brandon Woodruff at four. They've still got Jimmy Nelson at five, but it's probably Corbin Burns, right? Through the first.
It's Corbin Burns because nobody pays attention.
Yeah, because Jimmy's not going to be there for a little bit. The couple people
he did do 3 innings the other day and looked really good. Yeah, since the last time we talked, he looked great, but obviously they don't pay attention.
Yeah, I think they're saying that that's what it will be, but I mean, like, they've already made the announcement, I think, that they're not going to see him until, like, May or June. Other Brewers players...
Hashtag Tim Kirchen would have known that.
Tim Kirchen, who loves avocados. Mike Moustakas is going to see some push in the next year here. He's got the one-year contract, and I think the big reason they got that one-year contract is they've had some good play from their other second baseman here, Keston Hiura and Nate Orff have looked pretty good in spring training. Granted, it's spring training. Nate Orff is, well, he's batting 235, which is why he's not coming up now. Has a 350 on-base percentage and a 703 slugging. He has scored 10 runs. He has 5 stolen bases. That's pretty good. I like seeing that he leads the team. Nobody else has more than 2. Keston Hiura is batting 257, 350 on base, 3 home runs. He's got an OPS of 921.
Have you seen any of those videos of his home runs?
I haven't watched a lot of those, but I mean, like, it's nice to see him. He's batting pretty well. He's got some power. He's got a good OPS. He's 3 home runs. He's leading the team right now in home runs.
His home run swing looks just like Ryan Braun's, like early young Ryan Braun's, that quick, compact little home run swing. Oh, it's pretty. And just the way he crushes the ball, I like it. So
yeah,
but it's not a bad thing. Like we talked about last week during the podcast. Hey, having Moustakas for one more year, heck, I'll take it. You know, to cover down for a little bit, let these guys develop a little bit more. They'll get more playing time down in AAA anyways. It might be a little bit too early to come up to the big leagues right now. Yeah, I think it's a good place to be in.
And we might see Hiura probably through the year.
Spring training? Arcia doing anything in batting-wise in spring training?
He's still batting 257. He's got a 297 on-base percentage. He's got a home run. He's doing all right. If we can just get him to be an average hitter, if he's batting above 250, he's going to be on base.
If every game could be a playoff game for him,
right?
Then it'd be great.
I mean, like
his glove is so good. That's the biggest thing. I mean, if they can get him to 250 or 245, even, they're fine.
God, he was so good in the postseason too.
He's killing it. Yeah. Right now, the other players with 3 home runs are Moustakas and Yelich. Yelich right now has an OPS of 1.433. So that's pretty good. We love seeing that. Aguilar is batting 367, and Yelich in 30 at bats is batting 500. I mean, it's spring training. All these numbers are going to drop, but it's nice to see some depth here, especially at second base, where some of those guys are going to be coming in next year. Yelich looking like he's still on it. Aguilar, you know, hopefully getting in there. He doesn't have a lot of, he hasn't hit more than, I think he's just got the one home run, but it's nice to see him at least continuing to see the ball. Well, the home runs will come later. And, you know, once he's into that, and yeah, just feeling pretty good about the season.
It's good that the Marlins got rid of him. He didn't want to do anything.
It's so great that the Marlins had the last 2 National League MVPs on the roster at one time. And didn't win anything.
But yeah, managed to win 2 World Series before the Cubs could. Anyway. Hey, by the way, before we get off this Brewers topic, I'm not going to let this one go by the wayside. I don't know if you guys saw it on Twitter, but it's kind of everywhere. It may be preseason, but the @Brewers PR department is at midseason form. Have you guys seen the Mean Girls parody video that they did?
Yeah, that just came out.
Monty Grindal?
That's all over Twitter right now. It's pretty great.
The Brewers videos, and Brent Suter, who's been injured for like 2 years, he's going to be on contract with the Brewers just to make videos after a while, because he's the key to this. The mockingbird bit with the cart out to the bullpen from Dumb and Dumber 2 years back was amazing too. But this new video with Yasmani Grandal, it's brilliant. And nice work, Brewers PR department. You win yet again.
Yeah, they did Sandlot last year.
Yeah, it was Sandlot last year, and it was Dumb and Dumber the year before. And I'll tell you what, as far as PR goes, there's 2 departments that just are far and away better than anybody else, and it's the Brewers and the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves PR department is unbelievable as well. And at least the Brewers have something to work with.
Yeah, well, the Philadelphia
Flyers. If you want to see one of the worst, check out that Minnesota Twins public relations department. Oh, boy. They put out some funny stuff.
Ooh. That's too bad, because I like the Twins. But one of the
Why?
Other funny
How? Ones... No. They made an open air stadium in Minnesota. That's right. Hey, there's 4 feet of snow on the ground. Their opening day is next Thursday.
So that's all we've got for the main event. So we'll move on to the next part we've got here. We'll get into the rest of our sports here with the tail.
Rapid fire time now with the tail, covering Wisconsin's other sporting events.
Of course, we start off the tail with the UW women's hockey team, who beat Syracuse and are now moving on to the Frozen Four. Frozen Four, much like the Western region, will be in Connecticut. We fully expect it's going to be, again, Badgers, Gophers. I think that's about the way we're heading. It's the way it always heads. But
Connecticut is Western New England.
West of the Atlantic. Right? Yeah, it's west of the Atlantic Ocean.
Nobody else. Hockey just exists in New England, right? That's where it all. Okay.
Too soon. Too soon. There used to be hockey in Connecticut at one point.
They don't have hockey anymore? No way.
The Hartford Whalers. The whale. All right. Oh, man.
I see where you went there. Okay, yeah. Sorry. All right. Continuing on, too.
So in other news, too, great thing. We tweeted it out. You tweeted it out, Aaron. I tweeted it out. UW Oshkosh Titans win the Men's Basketball Division III Championship.
Good for you guys. Awesome. Nice work, UWO.
UW0. First off, beat Wheaton, Illinois, 104-85 in the semifinal. And then they beat Swarthmore, 96-82 in the title game. Congratulations to UW Oshkosh.
Those weren't close games at all.
No.
Holy smokes.
They were.
What the heck happened to the Tommies?
Oh, Tommies lost in the second round. They beat this with the school. Two of my alma maters met. Lacrosse played St. Thomas the first round. Tommies lost in the second round. Didn't get to the Final Four, or I don't think they got to Elite Eight. In other news, trying to run through a couple other D3 things. Men's track and field championships. UW Lacrosse fell just short of another national championship. They finished second, tied with Mount Union with 39 points. North Central of Illinois ran away with this. They had 55 points. In the men's, though, the dominance of Wisconsin State Colleges, Lacrosse finished second, Eau Claire finished fourth, Platteville finished fifth, UW Oshkosh finished ninth, UW Stevens Point finished 10th. They had five of the top 10 teams in the nation in the indoor track and field. That's kind of incredible.
We're bad at sports up here, John. That's what they tell us.
I don't know who said it. That's ridiculous. UW Eau Claire also finished 7th in the women's, and UW Lacrosse finished 11th. UWSP finished 20th among women's indoor track. And
that's actually disappointing for UWSP. They're a big track cross country school.
Not that I've ever been aware of. Eau Claire. Usually it's Lacrosse. I'm sorry. Lacrosse is the running school. It used to be also the football school until Whitewater took that over.
Right. Yeah. Well, Whitewater's just where everybody who can't make it on a Madison team goes to.
Yeah. Just for true Aaron.
Story. True story. Now that I know what the geography is, it's only 25 miles away from Madison.
Right.
It's,
yeah.
That's why they're really good at everything.
Yeah. For Aaron here, I'm giving you this. D3 wrestling championships were last weekend. UW Whitewater finished 7th, leading all Wisconsin schools. UW Oshkosh finished 16th in the D3 championships.
Wow, so they won the national championship at basketball, and they were 16th in wrestling.
And they had a very good football season, too, the Titans this year.
And they're a baseball school.
They're traditionally a baseball school. Traditionally, Platteville and Stevens Point are the big basketball schools.
Right.
Traditionally, you know, Lacrosse and more recently Whitewater, but traditionally Lacrosse was one of the big great football programs under Herring.
When we were in high school, they were huge. Yeah.
I think they're starting to bounce back a little bit, though.
I hope so. So
well, good, because they've got probably the best stadium I've ever seen on a D3 college team.
And they redid it recently, too, in the last probably 8 years. They redid a lot of that there. They got their rotation for the state grant money. The D1 Wrestling Championships are going to be this weekend. UW right now is ranked 17th in the nation. But to just show you how terrible it is to be in the Big Ten for wrestling, Penn State is ranked number 1, Iowa ranked number 3, Michigan ranked number 4, Ohio State ranked number 6, Nebraska ranked number 7, Minnesota ranked number 8. 1, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the top 8 schools in the Big Ten.
Yeah, no, that's Nebraska. Well, Oklahoma was always a big wrestling school, too, because that's where the Wrestling Hall of Fame is. But, I mean, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Iowa, I mean, they're juggernauts. They've always been juggernauts.
Yeah,
I mean,
Iowa is the wrestling mecca.
They were the big one forever.
They haven't been for a bit,
When Dan Gable was there, misnomer, Dan Gable did not wrestle for Iowa. He wrestled for Iowa State. But anyways, continuing on, two of the best wrestlers of all time wrestled for Iowa State.
Yep.
But
Sanderson?
Cale Sanderson, went undefeated for, I believe,
undefeated,
his entire career.
Which Dan Gable almost did, but he lost in the championship his senior year at Nationals. So his only loss was his very last college loss. And then he never lost another match in the Olympics or anything after that, any time after there. But those are juggernaut schools. The Big Ten is ridiculous. We don't talk enough wrestling. Anywhere, on sports talk radio or on podcasts. We really don't. But the Big Ten is, I mean, as much as everyone wants to say, you know, oh, the Big Ten's the juggernaut for basketball now, or Big Ten is now the hockey conference. If you want to find a sport that the Big Ten just dominates the heck out of, it's wrestling. Yeah. So, by the way, it's like I said, once in a while, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and various other schools, and back when Nebraska wasn't in the Big Ten, and Iowa State always figures in there too. But yeah, good luck.
By the way, Cale Sanderson, I just looked it up, is the head coach at Penn State. I did not know that.
Thank you. I remember that. That's the reason why. Yeah, never mind. And as soon as you said, when John said Penn State, something clicked into my head. And then, anyways, it's been a long podcast and I've had beer, so I forgot that Cale's out there. So
the other thing that the Big Ten is great at is volleyball. Like Penn State, Nebraska, they're basically the two biggest names in volleyball. Minnesota.
Well, Minnesota's got a good program now. Yeah,
recently, Minnesota and Wisconsin have also been very good. Yeah.
Yeah, their head coach up at the U is Hugh McCutcheon, I think, is his name, and he's phenomenal. He's done an unbelievable job with that program. Yeah.
Well, that's Minnesota. Minnesota knocked Wisconsin out of.
Yep, this year, yeah.
This year.
And I think Nebraska knocked Minnesota out.
Minnesota out, yeah.
There you go. Nebraska is the only place I've heard of where you can go into a bar and people will insist that they turn the volleyball game on. They have like an 18,000 seat arena that they fill every game or every match. The other big thing in D3, the Frozen Four for men's hockey will begin this weekend. The entire Frozen Four will be in UW-Stevens Point at what they're now calling, was it the Madness on Minnesota or something like that? It's on Minnesota Avenue in Stevens Point. It's KB Willard Arena, and they will be hosting the Frozen Four.
That's confusing.
Yeah, I live across the street.
In Stevens Point, it's a Madness in Minnesota. Wait,
on John. Minnesota. On he Minnesota. Yeah.
Have you been? Oh, no.
No, no. Sorry. But yeah, so that'll be very exciting. It's going to be great. Tickets have gone on sale. I believe they go on tomorrow for information for that. Take a look at that. If you can get to go see that, that's going to be a great series. Pointers are definitely favored. They beat other Wisconsin school, St. Norbert's College, to get in. They beat them 3-0. In fact, it was a 17-shot shutout for Rickman from UWSB. The fact that he only faced 17 shots in a national quarterfinal is ridiculous.
That is efficient.
Yeah. So that'll finish up our tale here, and we'll just get on to the last bit here with our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings, because it's time for the last call.
Now, Jim, you don't usually come with us on our last call. I don't know if you had anything quick to add here, but this is just our segment where we at least get to kick out a couple ideas that don't necessarily always fall in place with our Wisconsin thoughts. So if you want to gather your thoughts, if you have anything, let us know.
I've got one thought.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead first.
And this has to do with the Packers.
Okay. Oh, going after Russ Ball. Do it. Yeah, get him.
If Russ Ball has somehow made an error on the salary cap and strapped them to not pick up at least one more free agent, God help me, he should not have a job. Should not be allowed in the building. One job, that's all you have to do. That's all I got.
The things I wanted to talk about quickly, first off, Steve Wojciechowski is the coach for the Marquette men, and they've fallen kind of short here at the end of the season, but he's a great coach, and you can watch what he's been able to do in recruiting. That guy is beating Wisconsin to Wisconsin recruits. He has both Housers, who played at Spash, which is the Stevens Point area senior high, for those of you not around the Wisconsin area. And he's beating Wisconsin to players from Wisconsin. Wisconsin is the state college. It is the state university. Everybody here wears red. And, you know, Marquette is the nice place we root for when basketball playoff time happens, but we don't think about it much the rest of the year. He's going to pass the Badgers. He is going to out-recruit guard on just about every player he wants from here on out, and he's going to out-coach him. They basically have passed the Badgers at this point, but they're going to be ahead of the Badgers for a while, and guard is not going to be able to keep up with him. And until they find somebody who can be that sort of guy, or at least knows who he is, as Bo Ryan was not the flashiest coach, but he knew exactly what his system was, and he knew exactly who he needed to recruit, and he turned them into stars and NBA players. Guard has not been making his players better. He has been living with the players who are already there, and he's losing some seniors this year. But he's the guy who needs to get better, or they need to find somebody better, or they're going to be losing the state of Wisconsin to Marquette Golden Eagles. The other thing I want to hold on and talk about is we've talked a lot about getting a tight end in the early first rounds. And the only thing I need to tell people is, hold on. I'm not saying don't draft a tight end. I'm not saying I don't want one. But traditionally, tight ends are terrible their rookie years. You want to know what Travis Kelce had during his rookie year? He had zero targets. Zero targets. He didn't do anything in his rookie year. Gates had like 23 catches. It's a position that traditionally takes the longest to get acclimated to the NFL. It's one where you're going to need to give them a full year before you see results. Don't start going crazy on a tight end at Green Bay who is picked this year, who does not turn into a star in his first year. You got to give him at least the second year to figure it out. The last thing I want to bring up is Larry Baer, the CEO of the San Francisco Giants, was involved in a very public and videotaped altercation with his wife this last week. San Francisco Mayor London N. Breed has called for a strong message from Major League as well as several other groups against violence against women. And this just kind of brings up the point. We've been very acclimated to the idea that we need to punish and quickly go after every player. And they do need to be addressed, and they do need to be talked to, and they do need to face consequences for actions because no man should ever put their hands on a woman. Additionally, though, the owners, the executives, the white-collar people who are running these teams need to face every bit the consequences, if not more, because they are in the positions that are leading these teams and putting these teams in place. These people are making the most money off of these teams and benefiting the most from the system that exists. They need to be held accountable by the leagues and by anyone else out there, and they need to be reported and held to the same sort of standard in terms of being reported on as any of the players in the league. And I think that that's something that very necessarily needs to be brought out because this one did not get a lot of attention today, but it probably should. It should get absolutely as much attention as anything that happens with any NFL player. Aaron, what have you got?
Well, bouncing off that about the owners there, let's just tee it off on Jim Dolan. Do you guys see that thing with the video of him getting told by a fan that he needs to sell the team and then banned him from Madison Square Garden?
Yes.
Yes.
Then the Knicks are in full-fledged Cubs mode for over 80 years where all they do is sell tickets nonstop, so there's no actual pressure to put a good product on the floor. So moving on to the next one, putting hands on a woman. Well, in this case, a three-year-old boy, Tyreek Hill. Boy, the Chiefs are really good at drafting and developing people that like to beat women and beat children. Now, isn't that awesome? So what team's going to probably pick up Tyreek Hill after he's released? Well, let's go Browns. Anyways.
The Cowboys.
There has not been enough attention on this podcast about the fact that the Bears picked up a kicker named Blewett.
That's right, yes.
Just wanted to say that, John. We're failing at our jobs. That could have been a whole podcast right there, and then we could have just devolved into how bad Bears fans are and blah, 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 whatever, and how bad they're going to suck in 2 years from now when they actually have to pay Mitch Trubisky, who's at best a top 20 quarterback talent in the NFL. Anyways, Dirk Nowitzki tonight became the number 6 all-time scorer, just ahead of Wilt Chamberlain in NBA history. I found that very interesting. It's amazing for a guy that averages, what does he average? Like, not even 20 points a game, I don't think, for his whole career. Like, just says something about just being out there and being 40 and just making shots. And last but not least, one of my favorites, we've been talking a lot of freelance tonight. I usually do a lot of quoting off Twitter, but one of my favorites, Clue Haywood, at Clue Haywood, Clue spelled C-L-U-E, Haywood spelled H-E-Y-W-O-O-D. This guy is a degenerate from Arizona that likes to post a lot under the moniker from the Major League Baseball movie. He is very well known for bashing on Peloton for a while, although if you ever bring it up on his Twitter, he will block you. Anyhow, he's from Arizona, and our new extreme and he goes to Diamondbacks games. Our new extreme ballpark food includes the Fat Pants, a 40-inch long hot dog on biscuits in a gravy bun, covered in Italian cold cuts, bacon, mac and cheese, garlic, mashed potatoes, Neapolitan ice cream, baguettes, nacho cheese, and kung pao chicken, $35.
All right.
John, back to you.
All right. I do want to put out one thing. I'm just double checking Twitter as we go through here at the end of the show. Tom Silverstein is now reporting regarding Russ Ball and some people's comments on Russ Ball, saying he's not off. And I'm reading this from him regarding Ball. He says he's not off He knows exactly how much space they have. Our information isn't in real time and isn't what the league calculates. It's based on info from the players union, and that's not necessarily up to date. So, yeah, there's going to be more on this as we go through and as things come up. So,
a little bit of a Wasserwanga by Tom Silverstein.
Yeah, I don't know. So anyhow,
Jim gets that. John might not remember that.
I don't know. But anyhow, I'm just going to say we are out of time, and we're going to have to let everybody go. Thank you for hanging with us. Just to remind you, of course, you can follow me at jbarn54. You can follow the show at ScottyJohnny1, Aaron at Cheddar Talk, and Jim as Jim Widener 51, correct?
That's right.
Excellent. All right, and until next week, remember, whether you're on the town or on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.
Thank you, Jim. We love you.